temporarily on teleconference. We've got three bills before us today. We're going to take up House Bill 110 and House Bill 111 first. Before we do, though, we had leftover business on House Bill 140 from last week. Assuming we can wrap it up quickly, I'd like to go through that. Commissioner Foster, are you there online in Anchorage?
Yes, I am.
I'm not sure we're going to need any help today, but I'm glad you're there. There may be questions if you could stand by. Let me make sure that all the members have the letter dated February 22nd from Commissioner Mark Foster. Everyone have that in the packet?
No.
I think it should be. Okay. Basically, the recommendation that Mr. Foster is making is for the word shall, and the another statement, which is the commission shall promote solid waste recovering and recycling services in the establishments and rates under this chapter. We've included that in a committee substitute for discussion purposes. The committee substitute hasn't been adopted. This is something we spent quite a bit of time on last meeting, and we had defeated an amendment that attempted to add the word may as we last left this. Any questions anyone wants to ask of Commissioner Foster on the subject? Okay, is there a motion to accept the, Representative Donnelly?
Move to adopt the committee substitute, Mr. Chair.
Okay, it's been moved to adopt the committee substitute. Is there objection?
Just Mr. Chair.
Okay, it's been objection. All in favor of adopting the committee substitute, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4 to 1. Any other further discussion on the bill at this time? Is there a motion on the bill?
We're at teleconference, right?
We are with Mr. Foster.
I just want to express concern to make sure that the chair uses, watches this piece of legislation so that it doesn't turn into more than this in the other body or has another agenda added in. I think this is a neat, this is a good bill, but my only fear is that there's people that have different agendas for the subject of solid waste that I would hope would be kept away from this. So, unless there's other comments, I'd go ahead and go with individual recommendations.
Okay, it's been moved with individual recommendations. Is there any further discussion? Is there an objection to move the bill with individual recommendations?
Mr. Chairman, I don't object to that except for I wanted the record to know that I prefer the word may permit rather than shall, so that there's flexibility in the local community with that.
Okay. Great. I will take it and move with individual recommendations on the object. Next, we have before us House Bill 110. Do we have someone from Representative Navarre's office to describe the bill? Carl, do you want to talk about it? Do you know enough about this? You can just sort of fill in. We put three bills in front of us, plus another pending matter we'd like to get as far as we can today. So, if you could just state your name for the record.
Okay, are we on teleconference?
With one person, yeah.
Yeah, my name is Carl Olds. I'm a legislative assistant for Senator Fred Jaroff. My particular interest in the bill is that Senator Jaroff has companion legislation on the Senate side that is identical to this. Okay. House Bill 110 is to clarify the confidentiality of provisions in CFAB statutes. And as I understand, the particular problem that they've had is CFAB statutes now require very strict confidentiality, so that when a court of law wants access to records, they have to defend them all the way. And the end result is they end up losing the case. So they're trying to get an amendment to their statutes that would just clarify the situation in which the records could be released and avoid a costly and long court fight. That's the basic premise of it.
Is there any kind of position paper available from any state agencies?
We haven't. We have someone from CFAB on the line when we, if anyone has any questions for Carl. Any questions for Carl? Okay, well, let's, thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Carl. Let's go to Ed Crane for House Bill 110.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I should comment, I understand Representative Donnelly asked a question there, and that was, I did not get his question clearly. The communications kind of cut out as he spoke. So I would like to come back to whatever that question was. And I think Mr. Olds has very succinctly summarized the purpose of the bill. CFAB has lived, we've existed for a little over 10 years now with what's a very unusual and very tight confidentiality provision in our statute. It's been a matter of some concern to us because it really is not realistic. But we had never had any particular trouble until just by coincidence. Within the past year, we've had four different situations in which parties involved in litigation or enforcement agencies have wanted to get CFAB's records, and they have approached us in the same manner that the system approaches any other financial institution. And effectively, because our statute is so tight, we have been forced to say, no, we cannot violate our statute and give you that information. Their alternative then is to file some sort of action against us in court, which, as Mr. Old says, we inevitably lose, and we expect to lose. But we then have the protection of a court ordering us to violate our statute. So what House Bill 110 does is provides, it was modeled after the confidentiality provisions that apply to commercial banks and credit unions and other types of financial institutions. And it says basically that when an attorney or a party in litigation or a governmental agency approaches us with a subpoena or summons that's issued in accordance with statute, we shall disclose or provide whatever records are being sought. And that's this is basically simply to add a little more touch of realism to what we do, and also to stop the cost that we've incurred this past year. We've spent almost $40,000 this past year in legal fees related to this confidentiality section of our statute, and our CFAB's only source of funds to pay such expenses is the interest payments which our borrowers make. So it's truly a waste of fishermen's money to do that. I would be I'll be happy to entertain Representative Donnelly's question or any other questions that the committee members may have.
And we have the question from Representative Donnelly was, is there a position from the administration? After that, Representative Parnell has a question.
I'm not aware of any position by the administration. The CFAB is unique among, I believe it's unique, at least it's very unusual among institutions which have a relationship with the state. It is not a part of the executive branch. It's literally an independent platypus. We're a creature of the legislature only, and we encounter difficulties at times when we want to communicate with the state because nobody seems to personify the state as far as CFAB is concerned. As a matter of fact, seeking a fiscal note for this bill and House Bill 111, I think your aide encountered quite a little frustration because no agency was willing to provide a fiscal note. We provided one ourselves, which I presume you have in front of you, which obviously says zero. But that's a long answer. But there is no agency or no part of the administration which has any particular reason to speak about or for or on behalf of CFAB.
Representative Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just ask that since this bill's coming to judiciary, I'll just head you off a problem ahead of time. If you could just do a short letter to us explaining, briefly, why it's needed, and that, just for from you as the subject matter of the bill. It'd be real helpful. I'd also think you should go ahead and contact the Division of Banking, and even if they don't want to give an opinion on it, just get a one sentence thing that we have no opinion on this bill, and that would be real helpful to judiciary.
We'll be happy to do that, and we will be able to do that. We are examined, the CFAP is examined annually by the Division of Banking, Corporations, and Securities, and we do have that relationship, so I'm sure we can do that.
Representative Parnell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Crane, is there currently any kind of a court case taking place where if we were to pass this, then that would facilitate the decision or allow a review of the material?
No, I'm afraid any change would not affect anything that has not been resolved. The only thing that has not been resolved yet is the Internal Revenue Service has filed a case in federal court against CFAB, and they've also threatened to charge me personally with a federal misdemeanor. But we're going to get that resolved without regard to the fate of House Bill 110. But having House Bill 110 in place would preclude those kinds of things happening in the future.
Sounds like we need a bill broader than just for the ombudsman for immunity. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Crane? Okay, is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill? Representative Barr, the sponsor. But just a note, Carl Olds did a great job in summarizing the bill, but your comments would be helpful as well.
Okay, I appreciate Carl Olds coming down and testifying. There is a companion bill. If there were another body, there would be a companion bill just like that, any other body, since you're not supposed to talk about the other body. Anyhow, this really is a fairly simple, straightforward bill that I think makes a lot of sense and ends up saving people money. So I would encourage your expedient passage of the bill, and I will take the responsibility for getting a position paper from the Division of Banking. And also, while CFAB did provide a two-page summary of justification for the bill, I will work with the Representative Donnelly and other members of the Judiciary Committee, which is where the bill goes next, to make sure that we address and answer whatever questions they might have.
Thank you. Now, why don't you stay with us just for the next bill as well. Any questions, Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem at all with this, but I want to move it on. I'm just anticipating what some of the members of the Judiciary have been asking for lately with all the bills, just to help get it through faster. So with that, unless there's other public testimony, I'd move the bill with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any other public testimony on the bill? Okay, it's been moved with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Here, no objection. So moved. The next bill is House Bill 111. Representative Navarre, if you could give us a summary on that as well, that'd be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I ever stated for the record. I'm Mike Navarre, in the District 5 of the State House. I'd like to tell you that House Bill 11 is a non-controversial bill, and all it is cleanup, but there's actually some controversy to it with respect to CFAB. It's a good bill for CFAB. It brings into question a number of policies, I guess, that we currently have in the state, one being that any loans allowed now through CFAB must be to a member. This bill would change that, still for only fishing or fishing-related loans in an amount of $25,000 or less. It would make it cheaper overall for the person getting the loan, but it would bring a little bit of competition in the industry with private institutions and their competition, I guess, for these small loans. Arguably, though, I think that oftentimes CFAB is much more, is much better at meeting the needs of the fisheries industry than our private institutions. I also want to mention that there is some concern regarding the liability, I guess, that the CFAB has to the state. I don't know if you want to characterize it as a liability. Their original capitalization was to the state, and they're scheduled to pay that back in 19, or the year 2000, I believe. It's and I haven't gotten a position paper here from the Division of Banking either or from the Department of Revenue, but there are some concerns with respect to that, especially if we allow additional authority to them, and what that means in terms of their ability to at some point return the investment that the state made at CFAB to the state. And I would like to request that when we finish some of the discussion on this, that either you put the bill in a subcommittee or else hold the bill over, because there's a significant amount of work that needs to be done additionally on this before it's in a form to pass out of the committee.
Thank you. Are there questions for Representative Barr?
I really don't know much about this particular institution. I was wondering, is it the loans that come out, they're really targeted towards Alaskan fishermen?
Yes.
And is there any, and is that why they originally had the membership requirement somehow to help facilitate that it would be focused on Alaskans?
Yeah, and it was envisioned as a co-op. That's what it is.
And would there be any federal banking problems if you went away from a membership organization that would require you to offer the loans to outside fishermen too, or would there any problems like that?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Representative Ivan.
Yes, Representative Ivan from District 25, and I'd like to speak on behalf of this bill. I support it, and those folks that represent our small commercial fishermen. Rural areas, and sometimes they have a heck of a, this is my language, a hard time getting small loans like this from local banks. So I appreciate the fact that this is giving the rural folks an opportunity to participate in this. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on that. That is what this is targeted at. There are some policy determinations on whether or not the competition is significant enough with some of the other banks, or whether or not some of the private banks are currently meeting what is a need within some of the rural areas adequately, and that is the purpose of the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Representative Law? Representative Parnell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has the group considered a format, something like say a small business loan, where you have to at least apply in a couple of places and turn down before you can qualify to come and ask a group like this? Did they have a format like that they thought about?
I would say that it's not envisioned to work that way now. The reason being that in some of the rural areas particularly, it's very difficult for them to be able to access and go through the process of applying for several different loans because of the logistics and things like that. And this would just be a heightened level of service to rural communities targeted at fisheries and fishermen.
The other, Mr. Chairman, the other day when I talked with some of the representatives on this idea, I don't mean our representatives, I mean from CFAB, I didn't quite get a clear understanding of the criteria used. Would the fishermen be required to submit the same kind of financial information there as they would at the bank for the decision?
Mr. Chairman. Yes, they would, and that does bring into question your earlier suggestion that they'd be turned down by some other places before CFAB be allowed to lend them. That brings into question, I guess, whether or not we want to allow and assume that additional liability for CFAB, which translates at some point into an additional liability to the state.
That's correct. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Representative Rock? Thank you for coming today. The next person we've got is Ed Crane again. Ed, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
If you could give us brief comments beyond what Representative Barr explained, that'd be helpful.
Okay, most of it has been touched on, but there are a couple of points I would like to expand on. And I realize there are three relatively new members of the legislature on your committee who may not be completely familiar with CFAB from the past. But CFAB finance, as far as individuals are concerned, agriculture or fishing or timber, forest products, the forest products industry, and nothing nothing in this bill changes that or is intended to change that. We CFAP currently has, and you might make a note for future reference, in Alaska 4481210, the 4481 is a CFAP statute. CFAP currently has the authority to do all of the things that are discussed in Section 1 of this bill, except our statute as it exists mentions that the recipient of a loan must be a member of the bank. As Representative Navarre mentioned, CFAP was structured, was intended to be, and is, and will continue to be, a cooperative. That is, its customers become its owners. It was patterned in 1978 after institutions in the Federal Farm Credit System, which are all cooperatives. And therefore, I'm making an assumption here, therefore that language, must be a member of the bank, was included. To give you just a little more background and the reason for this bill, CFAB is extremely active in some areas and some fisheries in the state. We have heavy concentrations of loans for Bristol Bay fishermen, Cook Inlet fishermen, Kodiak area, Prince William Sound. We aren't quite as active in southeastern Alaska, and I think that's partly a matter of geography, and also there are a couple of commercial banks down there that have historically been fairly active in financing fishermen. But one place we have not been able to do what we think is an adequate job of meeting the original intents of CFAB, as spelled out in the first legislation, has been these interior fisheries, such as the lower Kuskokwim and some of the fisheries out on the chain in the Yukon and Norton Sound, Kotzebue Sound, places like that. And believe me, that has nothing to do with it's not a reflection of our motivation, our lack of motivation, but it's a combination of factors. Those tend to be what you might call low-budget fisheries. They do not require an extremely large capital investment, so the loans, and they don't provide a particularly large return to the fishermen either. So the loans do tend to be fairly small, in the $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 range, or the needs tend to be fairly small. And the CFAB, where our only office is in Anchorage, most of the business we do is carried on by mail or by telephone. In the fisheries to which we're referring them, we often run into communications problems, sometimes cultural problems, with the low level of needs involved. It really is not effective economically for us to attempt to send people out to Bethel, for example, to spend any significant amount of time and try to meet some of these needs. So we just have not found a realistic way to do it. And we have been talking recently about trying to work through agencies such as CEDC or perhaps some of the village nonprofit corporations or perhaps even public agencies to work as application takers and perhaps service loans for us, not to be involved in the actual credit decision, but some way to overcome the logistical and communications problems we face there. And I want to stress, it may sound self-serving, but I want to stress our only intention here, our only motivation is to provide a service that is not presently available to people in these fisheries. As part of our internal discussions, we've attempted to go through our application package, for example, and try to find places where we could simplify it for small loans. And also we focused on this matter of membership. Becoming a member of CFAB, among other things, involves a fairly substantial purchase of stock in CFAB, an investment in CFAB, which remains almost indefinitely after a loan has been paid off. There's a record-keeping requirement and communications requirement which remains after the loan is paid off. It's a part of CFAB structure in existence which we frankly felt was inappropriate to the kind of the question was raised as to what effect that might have on things. First of all, as far as the Internal Revenue Service is concerned, for example, a cooperative may do up to 50% of its business with non-members and still retain its right to be taxed as a cooperative. As far as our lender is concerned, which happens to be the National Bank for Cooperatives, they also have a similar requirement. The cutoff is 50%. I cannot imagine us having more than 2 to 3, perhaps a maximum of 5% of our loan dollars in these kinds of loans. So it really is not a significant matter. What it amounts to is, because our statute today says must be members of the bank, and because we're contemplating an exception, that is really the only thing we're asking from this legislature is an exception for this group from that phrase. Well, we can't very well, we've learned in the past, we can't very well come down to Juneau and just ask you to knock a couple of words out of our statute without giving you some background, so we have filled it in with the other provisions here in Section 1. We've tried to put it within a context. But we do have the ability and the authority now to make small loans. We have the ability and the authority now to deal with folks out in those fisheries. We have the legal ability and the authority to make agreements with public agencies or with private agencies to do these things. There's nothing. There are no new authorities there. The only thing that's really new is the elimination of this members of the bank requirement for this relatively small group of potential borrowers. I realize I've had some communications from representatives of the Bankers Association and commercial banks. I guess my only reaction to that is I would be happy to be on record in the minutes of this committee. I'll write a personal check for $1,000 to any charity your committee names if any commercial bank could come up with as many as 15 or as few as 15 of the kinds of loans that are being contemplated here. There's discussion of competition. I frankly don't have a lot of patience with that. We very rarely lend money to people who do not need to borrow money from CFAB. And in general, because commercial banks have much more flexibility than CFAB has, people don't come to CFAB if they can get their financing from a commercial bank. And it isn't because they're poor credit. It's just, again, simply the fact that commercial banks, because they are full-service banks, have more flexibility. So I'm sure it sounds self-serving, but this business of competition is kind of a smokescreen. This will not affect, or I cannot imagine how it would affect in any way, CFAB's ability to retire the state's investment in the year 2000. That question was raised in 1980. The state of Alaska invested $31 or $32 million as Class C stock in CFAB, and the statute does require that be retired on or before July 20th of the year 2000. As a matter of fact, we've had discussions in the recent past about the possible early retirement of some of that. But that state equity, that state capital is intact. It is a significant part of CFAB's foundation. As I mentioned, we borrow money for relending to fishermen, and without that strong capital base, we would not be able to borrow money the way that we do for relending to fishermen. But I would also point out that the $32 million invested in CFAB is almost an insignificant amount compared to the state and municipal and other public funds which are on deposit in the commercial banks around the state who are afraid of CFAB's competition. I believe I attempted to address all the questions that were raised, and again, to provide a little more context for this for Section 1 of this bill. Are there other questions that I missed or that you would like me to address?
Not that I'm aware at this time. Appreciate your going over this. The Representative Bruckman, though, has another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Representative Bruckman, and just a quick comment to the speaker's mention of the new legislators. Some of us may not have had all that much fishing experience, but I have been a member of a couple of credit union boards, and I actually appreciate this legislation because I think it fills a gap. I need a gap, and with the respect Representative Navarro's comments that there are details that will be worked on in the other committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. Clark, did you want to testify on this?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman. Click this on here. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Clark Greening. I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Credit Union League, which is the group trade association that represents all 18 credit unions in the state. There are 16 federally chartered credit unions and 2 state chartered credit unions. Alaska is fairly unique among states with credit unions. It has an over 80% participation by Alaskans. Over 300,000 Alaskans are members of credit unions, and they extend throughout the state. They range in sizes of assets well over $800 million to as small as $600,000. The association has not taken a position on this bill and may really not have any big concerns about it, but I would suggest to Mr. Crane that while he's talked to the bankers, he might also take the time to talk to the credit unions or some representatives of the association, and I can give him some names and probably with a few phone calls any concerns that they presently have with the bill could be worked out.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clark. Anyone else present who wants to testify on this bill? Okay, check the, there's no one else on the teleconference, I assume, who wants to testify on this?
No.
Okay, what we'll do is follow Representative Navarro's recommendations. We'll put this into a subcommittee. Representative Ivan will chair it, Representative Parnell, and Representative Taylor. All their members are encouraged to attend as well. And if you could work with the sponsor and other interested members, Representative Donovan.
Mr. Chairman, I might ask the members of the subcommittee if they could just see if they could find an answer to that one question they asked. I just wanted to make sure we weren't having any problems by going away from a membership system. Still maintaining that Alaskans only would be the ones that were eligible for these things.
And the just all the committee members, including those who aren't present here, will be considered part of the subcommittee. So just by attending, you'll be part of the thing. So there's nothing more on that. We one thing I'll mention is a House Bill 99, which we held off till today. We're going to hold off again till Thursday for lack of any of our minority members here today. Plane problems and such. Next bill is House Bill 107, and I think we've got the sponsor, Representative McLean, to join us.
Do you want to close the teleconference?
I can't tell. I think we'll at this time we'll close the teleconference because I don't think anyone's listening on this.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Finkelstein and Chamber of Commerce members for hearing House Bill 107 today. The purpose of House Bill 107 is to allow domestic insurers transacting 3 or more kinds of insurance to phase in new capital and surplus requirements enacted in Senate Bill 212 of last year. And it would be over a 5-year period. The legislation is necessary for smaller insurance companies, which will not have the required $5.25 million in capital and surplus by January 1, 1992, and could potentially be forced out of business. Senate Bill 212 was intended to provide for more stringent financial criteria for an insurer to become and remain licensed. Although the problem of the small insurer was recognized late last year near the end of the session, rather than hold up the bill and possibly prevent its passage, the Division of Insurance agreed to address the issue of the small insurer this year. This legislation will affect only one insurance company in the state, which does transact three or more kinds of insurance, and House Bill 107 is supported by the Division of Insurance and has a zero fiscal note. I do have a friendly amendment before you, and what it would do would be to prevent a new investor from phasing into the new capital requirements in House Bill 107. For example, if a new investor were to purchase a company phasing into the new capital requirements, then they would have to immediately infuse capital to bring them up to the new capital requirements. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions? Thank
you, Mr. Chairman. On your amendment, does that mean any corporation or just those that are affected from May 16th? I guess I don't understand that May 16th date. Why, is that when the other one was passed before?
Senate Bill 212, that's when it was passed, and it would just be a friendly amendment to the bill, House Bill 107.
Okay, so then this would apply to anybody regardless of when they themselves were in business themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Then I'm not sure, you mentioned there were three different kinds of insurance that it covered. What kinds of insurance does this company? And can you pronounce that? Is it Umelec
Insurance. If you look at House Bill 107, it tells you the types of insurance that they have: property, marine and transportation, vehicle, casualty, and insurability and disability.
I'm sorry, I missed that. But
it's in House Bill 107.
Is this company carrying all of those?
They have property and I'm pretty sure automobile.
Mm-hmm. That was my question on the company itself. On the money to run the company, are they just saying that it would be easier for them to survive over the next 3 or 4 years if we were to sort of cut back on the restrictions or the requirements?
When Senate Bill 212 was processed through last year and it became law, it kind of left the Umelec Insurance in a bind because they couldn't come up with the capital in phasing in that required amount of 5.25 when it used to be 3.25, I think, million.
Okay, so this would make it a little easier for them to
phase in.
Yes, to be a better service over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the feeling is eventually they'll be able to get up to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Don, do you want to join us?
For the record, my name is Don Koch. I'm Chief of the Market Surveillance Section with the Division of Insurance. Representative McLean has given you a pretty good overview on what this does. Last year, there were a packet of bills going through, insurance bills, including Senate Bill 212. Senate Bill 212 dealt with a great number of financial issues. Included in that packet was, or in that bill, was an increase in the capital and surplus requirements for all insurers. As it turns out, the one company that is impacted by this the hardest, Umelec, is in something of a bind. Its premium ratings are somewhere on the order of $3 million a year. And they would have been required to put a rather substantial additional amount into their capital base. But one of the things the bill did last year was to require that insurers have not only a capital amount, but also maintain certain levels of surplus. Umelec used to have to have $1.5 million of capital. They were required at their initial formation to have an additional $1.5 million of surplus, but that surplus didn't have to be maintained. So effectively, they were required up until May 16th of last year to have $1.5 million. With that bill, they, as of January 1 of the coming year, would have to have $5.25 million in order to continue in business, writing the number of lines that they are writing. They do write auto, they do write some workers' comp, general liability lines. They're small, but they're full scale. The reason why we don't have a real problem with doing this is that we're real close to them. They're domiciled in Anchorage. It's very easy to go in and keep tabs on what they're doing. if this company were located someplace outside, we would probably be a bit reluctant to do what we're requesting that you do here. We're supporting this legislation, so in a sense, we're requesting you do it. The packet of bills I described through the things that happened in legislatures, were kind of held up last year until the very last moment. In the very closing days, and I think it was about the 115th day, it was realized the impact that this would have on Umelec. They asked to put in an amendment. We asked them to not put in that amendment because the effect would have been to kill the bill. It could not have gotten through the process, at least from the discussions we had with others. It would not have gone through, and we did desperately need to have that legislation. So we agreed to support their request to have this change to basically stagger in the requirements so that five additional years to phase into to this new requirement. We have no problems with it.
Representative Donner.
Yeah. Mr. Koch, I understand from talking to the director also one of the reasons the division doesn't have a concern is that this particular corporation has a pretty specific targeted market. They deal with certain types of clientele, and they don't anticipate they're going to go out and become an all big marketing effort and expand in any way.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct.
It seems to make a lot of sense to me, Mr. Chairman.
If I may add, there's one additional thing. On the friendly amendment, we also support that. What that's intended to do is to provide that if a new investor comes in and buys that company, that they don't continue the protection of this slowdown clause, if you will. The idea being that if they were bought, there's a great likelihood that their target would change. Mm-hmm. And so we would want to see them be at the full amount that anybody else would be required to have.
Okay. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't had the benefit of the previous discussion from last year, but and you're close to it, so in relation to the requirement that was placed last year, how does this corporation itself fare as far as their chart and their claims and the things that they have underwritten? Are they riding fairly low? Are they midstream with everybody else? Or are they fairly high?
Oh, I understand.
In relation to the requirement?
Mr. Chairman, their relation to the capital that they do have, capital surplus they do have, is a healthy one. Typically, an insurance department will look for something on the order of a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 ratio for writings. If you go beyond that, writings to surplus. If you go beyond that, then we start to get concerned. But given their writings and their current surplus, they're in good shape.
Okay.
Plus the fact that we're able to look over their shoulder rather easily. We know they have some pretty good management there now, and they're just a well-run small company, so we're comfortable.
So, Don?
Mr. Chairman, are you ready to take questions?
We've got one more witness. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank
you,
Don. Phil Dressen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Phil Dressen, and I'm an insurance agency owner in Anchorage and the president of the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers Association. We're here today representing approximately 50 member agencies with about 300 licensed individuals, and we're in support also of the legislation. Umelec provides a very good and important service to us, so that we can extend coverage to particularly bush locations, bush property, bush casualty coverage, and also marine. I believe those are the three areas that they write that I'm aware of, at least that our agency utilizes. We also support the friendly amendment. We think it's a good idea.
Great. Appreciate your coming forward to testify. Anyone else in the audience who wants to testify?
I move the adoption of the proposed amendment and to a committee substitute.
The amendment on page 1, line 6 has been moved. Is there objection to the amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment is adopted. Representative Donner.
Move the bill with individual recommendations.
The bill is moved with individual recommendations. Is there any discussion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, it is so moved. Any other business before the committee today?